Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so lots of stuff has happened
this week
while you've been
Since we haven't spoke.
I want to ask you first of all, and I know we've talked a lot about Hardwick, Damien Hardwick, and you know all the stuff there. I remember watching your little show, and we just looked up the date. It was May 1st,
yes.
And you actually flagged the idea. Not that Damien Hardwick was going to split.
No one saw him coming.
But he was going to resign, about the decision that maybe he needed to make.
Yeah.
And you talked about Clarko staying on at Hawthorne and, you know, maybe when is the right time to leave a club, even though you've been a successful coach there.
That's right. At the time, he said no finals won after their last flag between the two coaches. So they coached their last premiership and then hadn't won a final after it. They missed finals altogether after the last flag. 2 years after the last flag, Hawthorne were 5-12. A year after the last final, Richmond at that stage were 1-7. So it was sort of pointing that way. And I was shocked and stunned like everyone when it was announced. But I think it's absolutely magnificent the way he did it. I absolutely endorse the whole way that it all unfolded.
Some people were saying, though, was he selfish for the way that he did it, like to walk out on them now?
No. I
don't think that, but no. What do you think?
No, I can understand why some people would be feeling that, but you then look back at what he's delivered and what he's been able to achieve. And at that time when we were discussing that, I was talking about how clubs and coaches and clubs are too embedded. Like, they're too wedded to each other. And then when you look in the big picture, then you won't – if we had the capacity to look bigger picture, we wouldn't have all these situations where coaches coach for another year and then halfway through the year they go, oh, no, my time's up.
Yeah.
So, no, I think it was great. Cut it clean, and I would like to have seen him coach on the weekend for the Richmond fans.
Yeah.
But I get – you know, it sort of says a lot about Dimmer. You know, but what the reasons he was in the game was for success for his club, not for pats on the back necessarily for himself. So he's off and gone.
I certainly didn't think that he did it for this reason, but I know how hard it is. I've spoken to Sheeds and over the years. You know, when you're coaching somebody for a long, long time, at some point you've got to have that terrible, uncomfortable conversation. You know what they've given to you as a coach, to their club. They've been part of a successful team, but you've got to then have that conversation about ending his career. And there's a couple of Richmond players that have been great, great players for the club who are coming towards the end of their career. Yeah. You know, Cochin and also Revolt and, you know, Dylan Grimes, you know, like over there. Do you think that factored in anywhere in his thinking, Damien Hardwick?
Not whatsoever. Because Revolt and Cochin are done, so that he's no decision to make there. He doesn't have to tap Jack Revolt or Trent Cochin on the shoulder. They're done. Dylan Grimes is committed.
But hang on, do you think they're done, though?
Yeah.
Do they think they're done?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Well, do you think that they've already had that conversation and they know that at the end of this year they're going?
As much, I don't know anything about anything, but I would say 99% certain that they're not playing next year. In fact, 100, I'll go 100 there.
Okay.
Because, yeah, no, they're done.
So he may have already had that conversation.
Yeah, I'm sure they have. I think if you put the lasso of truth around them, they know exactly where they're at. So the one thing, you know, and this is where the Clarkson comparison is real, is that Clarkson stayed because he had this sense of, yeah, commitment to O'Meara and Mitchell and the others that he's recruited, and in probably in the end stayed too long. I think by his own admission said no, it was not misplaced, but the sense of loyalty probably did more harm than good. Damien might have looked at Trando and Hopper and said, well, I've got you here on the premise that we're going to, you know, build and I'll be the coach. But no, he did the right thing. He's done the right thing by himself, done the right thing by the coach, as the players and the club. They now get on with the process of trying to replace him. Clear air.
And to that point, were you bemused by how many people in the media immediately thought about Hinkley being the replacement for Damien Hardwick at Richmond and the best candidate?
No, because this is where your mind goes to. And what I am interested, having just sat back for, you know, 4 or 5 days since it happened, and I haven't had to be anywhere so you can watch and read, is that And this is us. This is the media. This is what we do. It fuels all sorts of different scenarios. Mm. And in the process, it elevates coaches from where they're at to where they might be. It pushes other coaches away. Mm. It's incredible. I think Ken Hinckley's done a great job. He's Norm Smith right now, Ken Hinckley. It's as if Ken Hinckley's coached the last six premierships.
Mm.
That's the buzz around Kenny now, because he's got his club going really well, which is what he's paid to do. I mean, that's the job for him. But now there's this vacancy. So, and I'm sitting there going, Kenny, I mean, there's a bloke called Craig McRae. I mean, when you're going to look for a new coach, so they're going, oh, it's Hinckley or it's this, it's that. Was a bloke called Craig McRae who's walked in. Surely that when you're looking, and there's no one size fits all to replace a coach, right? But when you're looking at recent history, he had no previous history. He walked in and he turned a footy club on its head where it was 17th and is now on this sort of march to the grand final, maybe a premiership.
How big is the job then, the next coach who takes over at Richmond? And we talked about, and you know, during the week, you know, the pillars of your football club, you know, Peggy's gone. Maybe Brendan Gale will go. Your coach is gone. Your great captain may be gone at the end of the year. Along with him, Revold, who's been an unbelievable player. Dusty Martin, we don't know where he might be at the end of the year. How good is this job at Richmond then for a prospective coach?
Well, job's great because the club's great. This is a great football club of the AFL, Richmond, and they're in the heartland. They're in the heartland of the sporting precinct. They've got their facilities sorted. You know, so that's... they've got a supporter base, the envy of most. So the job in that sense is enormous.
The talent at your disposal?
Yeah, I think there's work to be done there. I don't share some that suggest that they are going to be back contending for a premiership really quickly. I think they've got a bit of work to do on the rebuild.
I think in this game we underestimate, you know, when teams are successful, and we see that even with Hawthorn, you know, like the backbone of their team, you know, Hodge, Lewis, Mitchell, Roughhead.
Mm.
All the other guys are, you know, they've had some super players around that as well, Buddy as well. But I think we sometimes overlook that they actually had elite talent. Like they had, you know, in some cases, once in a generation type players that formed the backbone. I think Richmond have had that as well. You know, we know you don't replace players like that at that really pointy end of talent. No. You don't replace them overnight. They don't just turn up every year in the draft. I know you go to the draft and you get the best players available, but just because you get a number one draft pick, it doesn't necessarily mean that number one draft pick is going to be comparable to the number one draft pick of, you know, 5 years ago.
And they're not getting a number one draft pick. They haven't even
They haven't
even got a first round pick.
No, so
this year.
Yeah, so that makes their job even harder.
Yeah, and they would know that. I mean, that's why you win 3 premierships in 4 years. Yeah, when everything sort of comes together beautifully in the manner that it has. But now they've got to go back and sort that out. And I think that's great. I think they're going to be middle of the table. And so people then go, oh, well, you know, Collingwood came from 17th. Yeah, that's true. So a coach can come in and change things quickly. But when you look at what's happened at Collingwood now, they have got some of that generational talent running around. You know, Scott Penderbury's not Trent Cotchin. Scott Penderbury's still playing at the level, whereas Cotch has gone, you know, his magnificent career is coming to an end.
The stresses and the anxieties that are associated with coaching are there for every coach. It doesn't matter whether you're on the bottom of the ladder, you're on the top of the ladder, or wherever you might be. I mean, you feel defeats day in, day out as a coach. Should Stuart Dew be feeling less secure about his job today than what he was before Damien Hardwick announced that he was stepping aside?
Should he be feeling it? I don't know whether he should be, because I'm sure Mark Evans and everyone else is telling him exactly, you know, what he needs to hear, but the reality is he would be. No, I think he would be feeling less secure because, yeah, you've still got a 3-time premiership coach who's in the market, who's out on the market now, and he's coaching a team that has been, you know, promising a lot and delivering not much. So, of course, and that's unfair and it's sad, but this is the narrative. It goes over to Adam Simpson. I've been thinking a lot about Adam Simpson too.
Mm. In what way?
I don't think what else.
Hey, just on that point, we heard Ryan Daniels over in WA, who reports for Channel 7, was saying that West Coast Eagles are giving him 3 months leave at the end of the year if he wants to take it and just go away and freshen up.
He might take long term. He might leave altogether. That's what he should do. I mean, I think that's almost...
Leave altogether?
I think that's the cleanest, clearest thing for him to do for the whole West Coast situation. That's when just sitting back and watching it.
Why?
Because he should leave. Well, in my opinion, he just should leave because there's... Is he going to bury himself now down back into that footy club and, you know, it's going to take 5 years for them to reemerge, right? Is he going to be there at the end of 5 years? Adam Simpson? I don't think so. He just should go to them, look, I've loved being here. I've done my best. I've delivered a premiership. You've been great for me. And they should say, yep, you're damn straight. You've been great for us and we love the relationship, but now I think it's time. That's the easiest of all the decisions to be made in the coaching landscape.
It appears they don't want to make that decision.
I don't blame Adam Simpson. I reckon we were critical of them early about the way they played and, in modern footy and they're a bit slow to react. But have a look at – it doesn't matter. You can put Damien Hardwick, Alistair Clarkson and buddy bring Ron Brassey back and throw him over there right now.
Right now you could, yeah. But you think there's
that's
an element –
that's not going to change him.
Do you think there's an element in all this too where they actually need a break from a coach because you've had a coach there who's been there for a long period of time, won a premiership, probably, and you forge this relationship with players. Yeah, there's a lot of emotion that's attached within all that. We talked about that with Cochin and Hardwick before. You know, that same thing. You feel that, and within doing that, maybe you treat them kinder than what you should because of that emotional attachment.
Yeah, maybe, and a different lens comes in. But I just think for him and for the club, that is the best result, is at the end of the year, just shake hands and move on because they've got an enormous way to go.
Yeah.
Enormous way to rebuild and go. They can do that with another coach and not lose too much ground.
Can you see a world then in which – Adam Simpson could be the coach of Richmond next year.
Yeah, possibly. I haven't even looked that far ahead.
I know we're speculating now, but if you're saying that he goes, then I would think that Adam Simpson at his age, given his CV, ends up somewhere else.
Yeah, I know. Sure. And this is not a crack at him per se saying he's a hopeless coach, therefore he should leave. I just think that is the best thing for both club and coach. But then I'm saying, he would, sure. Of course, he'd be looked at from the Richmond powers that be, but they would be looking at the McRae example. You'd have to. But then you'd also look at this and you'd look at that.
Well, they've got Minnie McWalter who's going to coach for the rest of the year. And I just read what Barmy had to say about him. He said he's very, very similar to McRae. Yeah. Understated, humble, knows his footy, really bright, good people manager, gets on with people really well, doesn't take himself too seriously.
So just remember,
Barmy's been around a long time. When Barmy talks about people and his belief in, you know, what characteristics they have that are going to suit a successful coach, we should listen to him.
Think about who's saying those words and the success that he's had in identifying people to take clubs to where they need to go. That means that McWalter needs to be considered.
And just ask you a question about Melbourne too. Obviously, they lost their last game.
Yes.
But they didn't lose badly. But they now have lost a really important player in their midfield, Clayton Oliver, we don't know how long, maybe two, maybe three, maybe a month. They've got a bye in there somewhere. They've got a really tough month of football ahead of them too, their next four opponents. How do you reckon they're travelling at the moment?
I think this is really interesting with the Oliver out. He would have been in their best three players for 5 years, week in, week out, Clayton Oliver. Mm. And I wondered this when I was watching him against Port Adelaide, because Port Adelaide belted them for all but 20 minutes, right? Mm. And the player who was so quiet for all but that 20 minutes was Christian Petrarca, right? So Gorn had a quiet game. Mm. Oliver did what Oliver did. Petrarca, Viney was quiet. Lever was quiet. So all of a sudden Petrarca comes alight. Mm. For 20 minutes, they kick seven goals, get themselves back in the game, and then it's gone again. Can you get – when you got these what we call generational talent, so Oliver, Gorn, Petrarca, they're going to go down as three of the all-timers at Melbourne.
Yeah.
They've relied on them. When I say relied on them, they've gone out and just done what they've done. They've been the best three players nearly every single week. When they're not playing well now, have they been so good for so long that the bottom, or not the bottom, the rest haven't been able to sort of develop and pick up the slack, which is the challenge now for this weekend.
Yeah. Are the rest good enough?
Well, let's find out. You see, they are good enough because they've won a premiership. But I reckon over the last year and a half, they've been driven along by these blokes at the top end, and maybe subconsciously or subliminally they sit back and go, oh, well, Max will do it, or Track will do it, or Clary will do it. Well, it's not enough. It's not enough to have those blokes playing week in, week out at the level they are, and they still, you can't win a premiership. You need more from the rest. And I reckon that's where they're at right now. They're not getting enough from the rest.
We've seen Port Adelaide now on two occasions go after Max Gawn. What is it that they think about Max Gawn, do you think? Why do they think that they can unsettle him? No other club goes after him. I haven't seen any other team go after Max Gawn that Port Adelaide have gone after him. And again, they had Butters going up to Maxi Gawn at the weekend and bumping him.
Yeah. Oh, they clearly think that they can diminish his response. Well, he's not. If you're suggesting, is he weak or soft or anything like that?
Well, why do they think that?
I think they try to wear him down physically. Just wear him down physically, try and take his focus away from doing whatever he wants. Max is one of the most dominant players in the competition when he does what he wants. And that is run to where he wants, stand where he wants, mark the ball where he wants. So they did that. They took him away. He's where he wanted to run, and they also kicked the ball around him.
And so do you think it was just physical? It wasn't a mental thing that they were attacking him
for? No, I think it was all of it.
All
mental,
of it.
Physical.
Do you think they got to him?
He didn't have the influence because they were able to bypass him. And the other stuff, who knows how physically draining it is to have 18 other blokes bumping into you all day long.
Just on the Bulldogs, though, are they a sort of like...
Sneaky.
A slow burn. Like
sneaky.
They had to sort of find their groove as a team. They started the year sort of disjointed and there was a lack of connection. They're still trying to work out which pieces are going to fit best for their team and their talent, that type of thing. Do you think they're one of those teams, and we've seen this in the past, where teams just sort of, not that they sneak up on you, but they just get progressively better the longer the season goes.
They've been magnificent the last 2 months.
They look tight.
Yep. Yeah. Liam Jones. Yep. Isn't that a funny, when you think of all the talent at the Western Bulldogs, and then the first name I bring up is Liam Jones, because he gets, the back line's been a concern, one-on-one defending's been a concern for a long period of time, and he slots straight back in there, available to everyone, and just shores them up.
He did. And, just listening, I know you didn't listen to the Alex Rance interview yesterday, but it was just interesting, just sort of talking about the line of what they did and the alignment they had with the players out on the ground. This was where he had to get his reference point from playing that defensive role.
Yep.
And Revolt had to be in a position, then Cochin had to be in a position, and then he took his positioning from where Cochin was in the midfield, right? Yep. So he had to be he had to be 75 metres away from where the ball was. And I raise that point because I think Jones and what they're doing defensively, I think he's starting to do that too. You see him coming off his man at the right time, influencing play, that type of thing. It looks like there's always been a knock on the Bulldogs, particularly over the last couple of years, that maybe defensively that's where you can get them. You can get in there quickly, get the ball in there. They're going to be they're not going to be hard to play against one-on-one as defenders. But I think there's more steel and more organisation and more talent in their back six than what maybe they've had for a while.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Bevo's coaching beautifully and they get the job done. So we'll watch. They've got some challenges coming up, I'm sure. But I don't even know why I ask. 7 of 8.
Seven of eight, yeah.
Only lost to Port over there. So if Kenny Inkley's the new Norm Smith, then Bevo must be the new Kevin Sheedy.
So we've got six.
Are you proud of yourself?
We've got the Cats, the D's, Port, Lions, Dogs and Pies, all capable of winning the flag this year.
How many you got?
I got six.
You got, say again?
Cats,
yep.
D's, Port, Lions, Dogs, Pies.
Who's out?
Can you think of anyone else?
I haven't given it that much thought, but
Adelaide,
no, not this
too
year.
Too early,
not too early for me. The Pies are out in front. The Pies, they blow me away. The Pies,
yeah,
they've blown everyone away. They are way, way out in front.
I don't think they are. But I don't think. I don't
it
think
is round 10.
I don't think they're as far out in front as what you think. I think they're not that far out in front. No,
I don't know.
But we can have a big argument about that another time if you want.
I haven't got the energy.
Breakfast with Gary and Tim.
Oh, it's great to have our next guest on Whispers and talk about respect within the AFL footy world. And this guy sits right at the very top, and his team, coming off a grand final appearance last week, are just battling for lots of different reasons, and we'll find out why. Luke Parker, the Swans co-captain, has been good enough to join us. Welcome, Luke.
Hey, boys. How you going?
Going all right. It's been a bit tougher than perhaps we all envisaged for the Swans in the first half of the year.
Yeah, a little bit. We've had our ups and downs and some disappointing losses that we're probably in control of. And look, we've also been there by a bit of injury as well. So, look, we're hoping to string a few together and get the season back on track and come home strong.
Hey, Luke, it's always great to talk to you. What do you think about the chaotic ending to that game at the weekend?
Yeah, it was really bizarre. I don't think I've ever finished a game like that or won a game with something like that happening. I don't think that's happened in 13 years of my career, even in a free kick being awarded for that. So, look, it was really bizarre. So it does take away a little bit probably from the win. But look, we're kind of at a moment in our season where we'll take anything we can get.
Well, where do you think you're at as a group? You know, I know there's, and everyone knows, there's a lot of injuries associated with this. You don't have your best team out there, but very few teams do get to play their best team week in, week out. What do you think's going on at the moment with the group?
Yeah, for sure. I think everyone's got their battles. And for us, we've been disappointed with a few performances where we think we had the game in control. And I think that's kind of been a big focus for us going forward. Is I think it was the Port Adelaide game and Giants game. We're in the fourth quarter. We're up by 20 points and I'm unable to get those two games done. So if you put those two games as a win, then obviously the season's looking pretty different. So I think it's crucial moments in games that we're just not getting right. I think we're showing that our best is still very good, and I think we've been in majority of games for most of the day, right up to the three-quarter time. Even against Collingwood, I felt like we were having a real red-hot crack and in control of the game up until three-quarter time, and they were able to run away with the fourth quarter. So for us, it's about our best being good and our worst is just dropping off too far. So we know there's always going to be momentum swings, but it's just how far you let that go in a game.
Do you think that's a concentration issue?
I think there's multiple factors that go into it. I think there's a bit of experience to it, and then there's I guess the mental side of just thinking it's going to happen. So it's going to be a big focus for us going forward.
Well, nothing better than a Friday night stage to sort of sharpen everyone's focus again, and you've got a team who, well, you guys haven't copped as much sort of heat and criticism because, you know, for some of the reasons we've alluded to, but gee, the stakes are pretty high on Friday night against the Blues.
Yeah, they are. It's a massive game for both sides on Friday. So it'll be great. It's got Margaret Ground and we'll basically have a big crowd, big game, and we know both teams are pretty desperate. So it's those games that you want to be a part of, and hopefully we'll have a good win.
Are you going to stick the lizard on your shoulders and go into the ruck? I mean, who's going to ruck for you this weekend?
I think we've still got Lachie McAndrew, which had his first game on the weekend. He did all right against Goldie and held his own. And look, he'll keep getting better. And then Aidan McLean probably helps out a bit. But we know that's kind of not where the game's been won or lost for us at the moment. So he'll battle on and the rest of us can pick up the slack.
Tell us about Isaac Heaney and how he's tracking at the moment. So he's been a poster boy for the Swans for a long time. We've enjoyed his work in the middle and up forward. He's been all Australian and just for whatever reason hasn't quite clicked. So have you had cause to have a chat with him? How's he tracking?
Yeah, he's going all right. I think he's one of the hardest competitors that I know, and it'd be probably just as frustrating for him not being in probably the form that he's wanted this season. But for me, I know how quickly he can turn around. He's coming off an All-Australian year last year, and I think that the amount of work that other teams, opposition, put into him now obviously makes it quite difficult. But look, I think we're looking at a few different things, how we can get him into the game more, whether it's up on the wing or midfield, and rotating forward just to get him around the ball, because we know how how powerful he is in the contest as well.
We've, you know, just looking at some of the forwards, and they haven't had their greatest seasons, and, you know, Tom Papley the same, and Buddy and Heaney. And is that sort of a ball movement issue, like the methodology, the ball not getting there quick enough for those forwards to be actually finding some space? Have you identified anything at this point?
Yeah, a little bit of both. And that was probably one of the most frustrating things, I think. We've lost games where we had 65 entries to 45. I think that's happened twice. So I think we're getting the ball down there, giving opportunities. But I think there's a little bit of the synergy on our final kick inside 50, which at times has cost us that final decision. And then the forwards are helping each other out and working together. So we'll kind of address that. We'll continue to, just find the balance of the entry versus helping each other out.
Talking to one of the superstars of the Sydney Swans, co-captain Luke Parker. Just finally, what are you doing for the rest of the day? What's on today?
Just about to head into the club, mate. We've got our main, a little cruisy session today. So a few meetings, then massage, rest up, and enjoy the sun.
Tim's fascinated with your yoga classes of yesteryear. Do you still do them?
The yoga classes?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we got once a week, which is all right. I prefer just the breathing part of it because you end up just falling asleep, which is good.
You're still doing those outside there, overlooking the water? Is it Bronte or somewhere you were doing those?
No, we used to probably do it down at Clovelly and stuff, but we just got pretty good facilities now, so happy to stay there.
Oh, of course you have. You've got the new facility up there. You'd have a yoga room there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Got a room for everything.
Hey, good luck on Friday, Lukey. Appreciate you jumping on this morning.
Thanks, boys. Cheers.
On you, Luke.
What a star. What a star he is.
He's a beauty, isn't he?
He's an absolute jet. You keep telling me how good a mate you are with Toby Green.
No.
You text him at 8:03. It's now 18 minutes to 9. He hasn't got back to you, so we're going to Matt DeBoer, the former Docker and Giant, 223 games, off the rookie list, if you don't mind, and played with Toby for much of his career. And we can't get Toby. We'll go to the next best thing. Hey, Matty.
G'day, Gary. G'day, Whispers. How are you?
I'm good, Matty. It's well known, isn't it, in circles, footy circles, amongst your teammates, former and current, that he's always a little bit tardy when you send text messages to him, isn't he?
Well, I will guarantee he will get back to you, but yeah, the time, particularly at the moment, they're probably just, you know, in with Kingsley getting the due diligence on the opposition this week and getting ready to train. So you might be struggling before 9 a.m, but I will guarantee he will get back to you at some point.
He's not, Matty. He's actually, we just saw him do an interview on the Sunrise Show, so we know he's not doing any of that. He's just ghosting the Wisp. Hey, sum him up for us. So we watch him, yeah. We love him, yeah, the good, the bad, the naughty. I think the general footy public have come to appreciate, you know, he's arguably the best forward in the competition, but just sum him up for us.
Yeah, to be honest, he's one of my favourite people to talk about because, you know, the media narrative, I think, is just wildly incorrect. I think, you know, firstly, he's just like the most loyal person, and if you're in his sort of circle, he'd do absolutely anything for you, and I guess that's why we allow him to strut around a little bit. But he just backs it up with the way that he trains and goes about it. Like, everyone just has this immense respect for him. You know, when we cross that line to train, like, he'll put his hand through your chest to try and create separation, like, no doubt about it. But like, that just raises the standards at the training environment. And like, he just doesn't suffer fools. Like, if you're not having a go, like, you know, he'll lose respect for you in that regard. So he just raises the standards of any environment that he's in. And then, yeah, he just lives for game day, lives for standing up, lives for the pressure, you know, wants to elevate his own game always, but then everyone around him as well. So, and then off field, like, you know, reads the AFR, goes to a Sydney cafe and we'll just, yeah, read the AFR, we'll drink green tea, you know, does work experience, he's finished his commerce degree, he's just about to launch into his MBA. So, yeah, he just absorbs information incredibly well and just loves talking finance and investing.
I'll just jump in there because Tim's got a very confused look on his face. That's the Australian Financial Review, Tim.
Oh, thank you, Gary. Thanks for pointing that out. Hey, Matty, you
subscribe.
Know, given a lot of people's eyebrows were raised when he was named captain, and mainly because they'd seen sort of the indiscretions on the field and that type of thing, but was it a surprise to you or anyone within the inner sanctum?
No, not at all. I think particularly over the COVID years as well, I saw him really grow and come out of his shell a little bit. I think he he can be quiet at times and just observing, and definitely leads through action. But then over the last few years, you know, he's really made a point of, you know, talking in front of the group, particularly when standards weren't okay, you know, on field. And, you know, he might say, all right, coaches leave, you know, this is just for players only, and sort of, you know, metaphorically grab everyone by the scruff of the neck. So, yeah, I've really seen that growth, particularly in the last few years. So to see him appointed was no surprise at all.
He's got a great capacity to just produce at the right time and when needed most, hasn't he?
Absolutely, and he will practice that, you know, at training as well, in terms of just those chance encounters, and you always just see him doing these little quick kicks around the corner for goal or whatever it might be. He's got, like, incredible timing and also reaction. So, yeah, particularly when I was there, he'd worked closely with Stevie Johnson regarding, you know, reaction timing and weighing up when he can, you know, potentially spit forward to make an impact. But the fact that he can beat people in the air or the ground just, you know, gives him that massive versatility.
Can we talk a little about you? I know we got you on to talk about Toby Green, but apparently you had a wallet pinched from a car while you were shifting house. Is that right?
Yes. A few years ago.
What happened?
What happened? There's a long story and a short story. I'll try and keep it short because we'd rather talk about Toby, but I essentially had my wallet stolen. The thief went tapping going up the street. So when the bank called me that, you know, this was occurring, we cancelled it. But I actually went down to that pub. He'd scattered by then, but I was able to get the CCTV footage and got a look at him. And they'd been studying the photo for a couple of weeks. And 2 weeks later, I just saw him walk past me
on
the street again. He was canvassing houses by the looks of things. And because I'd been studying his photo, I was like, that's him. So... unfortunately, well, I was 99% sure it was him, but I unfortunately had torn my hamstring during the week, so I couldn't run. So I hopped in my car and just sped up next to him, got out, and was sort of walking towards him and said, "Hey, mate, have you got any ID?" And then he's seen me and then just gone to bolt. I've just jumped at him and just tackled him to the street. But his shirt ripped, his hat fell off. So he scampered away. So he got away. So it was a missed tackle. We're putting it down as a missed tackle. But I was able to pick the hat up and did the right thing and dropped it off to the police. And because he'd been arrested previously, they had all his DNA. So they knew who it was. Oh, they went and picked him up. And then he got 18 months jail.
And did you get your wallet back?
I got the cash. Oh, sorry, I got the money that he spent, but I did not get my wallet back.
I'll tell you what, you don't want to tackle Matty DeBoer.
I told you.
He always gets his man. He's like the Canadian Mounties.
He even had the hamstring. He still tracked him down.
That is unbelievable.
Before
story.
We let you go, Matty, you got a little investment opportunity for the Wisp. Yeah. He's always got a bit of spare coin around.
So we've got a couple of things coming up. So I know Wisp likes getting the early mail, and he'd be on good sheets. So we'll chat offline.
I love it. Hey, thanks for joining us.
Hang on, I'll leave our number with our producer so you can track me down. I promise to get straight back to you. Okay.
Good work, lads.
Good on you, mate. Matty DeBoer. That's a great story.
That is an unbelievable story. Unbelievable story.
I've got to see my
what
story.
About that? What about going? That, you know, that just gives you a great insight to the way that he thinks and the way that he went about his football. That
meticulous.
He would go to the pub, get the CCTV vision, get it out, and then study the bloke's face and then notice him 2 weeks later. I mean, that is just extraordinary.
If he was set about to tag danger, do you think he'd go down to Geelong, get the CCTV from his coffee shop?
No wonder those blokes that he tagged had no chance.
I've got a similar story of chasing down a thief.
Have you? When?
I might save it for the pod, maybe.